Welcome to the CCTA Wake Up Call Show. We're glad you could join us. And my name is Bob Griswold.
Mary Griswold.
Alan Harrop.
Kim Fink.
Damon King.
Well, welcome everyone. Now, why are we here, Mary?
This is kind of a special show. We're going to learn today about the Frederick Douglass Foundation. And Damon is involved in that in some way. You can explain that. And he's going to explain how it works, what it is, and what it means. So please go ahead.
Lucy, we need some splaining.
Well, again, as she said, my name is Damon. I am a county liaison for the Frederick Douglass Foundation of North Carolina. And we have several liaisons. My wife is currently serving as a liaison for Craven County with me. We have liaisons set up throughout the state. And what liaisons are, we're kind of the communication line to that particular area for Frederick Douglass Foundation. Now, I'm sure many people are curious what the Frederick Douglass Foundation is. Well, if we can get to know Frederick Douglass a little bit, we'll kind of see the characteristics and the temperature of what the foundation is all about. So just a little background on Frederick Douglass. He was born, believably, somewhere around 1817, 1818, and it's believed that it was in the month of February, somewhere between the 14th and 20th. So much so that his mother nicknamed him her little heartbeat. Uh-huh. And so as to celebrate Valentine's Day. But he was born a slave. His name was Frederick Augustus Bailey. He was born in Talbot County, Maryland. At age 8, he was sent off to be with another owner, slave owner, and that's where he was taught the alphabet and reading a few words by his slaveholder's wife, the Auld family. And as you notice, if you know anything about slavery at that time, it was illegal in most states to teach a slave how to read. But before Frederick got to that point, Frederick never lived with his mother. He was immediately sent off after he was born to live with his grandmother, which was about 12 miles down the road. Frederick only saw his mother at night as she snuck away to be able to visit Frederick at night. And then by the age 6, Frederick's mother passed away and he continued on into the next dimension of life. That's where he went to live with the Auld family, and the reading and the education began. Of course, the master of the house found out that his wife was teaching Frederick how to read and immediately demanded that she stop, not only because of the legal ramifications, but his reasoning was if they learn how to read, they will then know how to become free. And so if you wanted to keep a slave, don't let them be educated. And, you know, like even in the Bible, God says, my people suffer for lack of knowledge. So knowledge gives us power to make choices and decisions and to even come into our own place. By age 20, Frederick had escaped again, disguised himself as a sailor, and he escaped by the help of a lady named Anne Murray, whom he married, and later they had 5 children. So when we start to see these things happening, we know and understand just from this point what the Frederick Douglass Foundation is all about. Frederick then began to be a writer and a prolific speaker. His oratory skills were amazing, and people were attracted to him all over the place. So he got out of the Maryland area. He began to move further, even further north into New York. And eventually, Frederick Douglass wound up overseas in the area of England. This is where a group of people liked him loved him so much that they decided to pay for Frederick's freedom in the United States.
How old was he roughly at this point? What year?
We're going to give him somewhere around 25. He was 20 years old when he disguised himself and escaped. We're going to give him between 25 and 30 when these things occurred to get him free.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. You know, he became an ordained minister in the AME Zion Church. So he became an ordained minister. He began to preach the gospel, minister the Bible, understanding how to bridge the two together concerning freedom of people. And Frederick got along with everyone. Yes.
Did he stay in England the whole time while he was doing this? Was he still in England?
No, he did eventually come back to the United States. I don't know what year roughly that was, but he did. And his work, his major work was done here in the United States.
As a free man.
As a free man. He wrote several books, and he had a lot of power and authority to be able to move about to do what he wanted to do, because people came from miles around to hear Frederick speak as a free man. And it was amazed that a black man, especially in this time, could do the things that he was able to do.
And so wait a minute. So you're talking, if he's about, let's say, 30 years old, mm-hmm. and he's doing his speaking, you're talking about maybe 1848. So you're still talking before the Civil War.
Right, absolutely. So if I can look at a couple of little notes I have here, in 1841 to 1847, he speaks at an abolitionist meeting in Massachusetts and is employed as a lecturer for anti-slave society. So that was not even 1850. 1845, he published a narrative of the life of Frederick Douglass, an American slave, and he left for England at that time and Scotland to escape his slave hunter. So it was about 1845 when he left. So I might want to, so let's see, that would put him right at 27.
So he's really...
When he escaped and went to England.
He's talking about something that has not come into its own yet. You're talking about a pioneer here.
Right. Yeah. He was still under a lot of heat. If he had been found at that time, he was still under the gun. But he was able to navigate into areas where he was accepted. And I'm sure his wife really, really was a strong backbone for him during these times, because she was a free woman at that time and helped him escape. Let's see. We have the English admirers, those in England, as we said, helped him to get his freedom. In 1846, they purchased his freedom. And it moves on to eventually Frederick Douglass hooked up with, if we just fast forward, he hooked up with Abraham Lincoln. And he worked very closely in the cabinet with Abraham Lincoln to help get the slaves free. Without a lot of detail, that's in a nutshell of what occurred there. He was also the first black man ever nominated for vice president of the United States.
Do we know when England stopped slavery?
I don't know when England stopped slavery. All I know is in 1846 is when they purchased his freedom.
Yeah, it was around the 1820s, I believe.
Okay, I'm going to go find that.
Right online.
England abolished slavery in 1834.
Is there, Damon, can you talk a little bit about the Frederick Douglass Foundation, what they do, what their objectives are? I mean, I don't know anything about them. Do they have a website? Or
good.
People can go to things like that might be valued,
yes,
for the readers.
So for the Frederick Douglass Foundation, there is it's a national organization. Then they have state chapters. Of course, we're the Frederick Douglass Foundation of North Carolina, or FDFNC. And you can go to FDFNC.org, and you can really read up a lot about what the Frederick Douglass Foundation concerning our chapter does. Of course, is integrated with the national organization.
The website again?
FDFNC.org.
Okay.
That's Foxtrot. Foxtrot, Delta Foxtrot, November Charlie.org. And so the Frederick Douglass Foundation is conservative, which puts us on the right side. Okay, it's a conservative organization, as Frederick Douglass himself was a Republican. He was a Christian. He was a conservative in all of his values and ways. Frederick Douglass Foundation stands with Frederick Douglass in that zone. The organization is primarily focused on, number one, education.
Amen.
So we want to be able to educate, and we're not just going into the black homes or the black communities, but it's for everyone, as Frederick Douglass was locked in with everyone. He didn't have to pander to one color or another, though, excuse me, his strongest efforts were to go into the black communities to free slaves. But yet again, as we see, Frederick Douglass can communicate across the color barriers as he became friends with Abraham Lincoln, and they worked well together. So the Frederick Douglass Foundation, education, and then it's all about children and the parents' choice of schools and entrepreneurship. So those are our three pillars to really stand strong on in regards to our approach to the community.
You know, an interesting thing, Damon, that you're talking about right now. What makes that day different than this day? Because I know that that in this day we look at the education process, and a lot of the education process is that we don't have to educate children; we have to indoctrinate them instead. And don't there's many students that graduate school without knowing how to read and don't know anything about that. And I'm sorry to interject with that, but that's sort of reminiscent of the old times, I guess.
Yeah. Well, those challenges face those of us working with Frederick Douglass Foundation as it does the entire community, you know, across the United States. Our job, though, is to be able to engage the parents, help the parents understand that they are the primary educator of their children. So it's kind of like going to a certain place in time and taking it back. I can remember as a child, my mom was my primary educator, so much so that when I went to kindergarten, the teacher called her and said, "You've got to stop teaching this kid. He knows too much more than the rest of the children." And my mother got mad and she says, "You don't operate in my home. I'm the primary educator of my child."
So how do you approach the population of students that you're looking to educate? Does the school have curriculums that you're allowed to introduce into school, or is it on an individual basis?
Well, it's more on an individual basis, community events, community meetings. We work well with churches and get churches involved in that process with us and allow us the privilege or opportunity to come into those churches and people's homes to do this.
Folks, we're going to take that as a quick teaser for the coming back from the break. I'm glad you stayed with us. This is the CCTA Wake Up Call Show.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business, it's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Moore's Old Time Barbecue is slow cooked and smoked over hickory in the tradition of the Moore's family for over 70 years. Moore's also serves fried chicken, cooked to order seafood, and homemade side dishes. Open 7 days a week in New Bern, Winterville, Moorhead City, Swanspur, and Jacksonville. Moore's will cater and deliver anywhere you want your truly traditional barbecue and fixings delivered. And remember, if it's not Moore's, it's less.
County Compass is a rapidly growing, free, weekly newspaper throughout eastern North Carolina. At the County Compass, we believe small business is the future of our great nation. Many small business owners have discovered that an ad in the County Compass each week is the most effective, the most affordable way to reach thousands of readers from all walks of life. At the County Compass, we focus entirely on local and regional news. Coverage of important issues that directly affect your life. At the County Compass, we love our readers and we love our advertisers. This Thursday and every Thursday at more than 750 distribution points throughout eastern North Carolina, pick up your free copy of the County Compass newspaper.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
Welcome back. And again, thank you for staying with our sponsors and supporters. Mary, you have a question.
Has the Frederick Douglass Foundation been working to bring some of the ethnic community up to the scholastic standards that they need to succeed in life? Because it seems like our schools are not laying a good foundation for everybody.
From the national office, yes. We even have someone who lives down east, you know where down east is.
Yeah.
We even have a gentleman, Mr. Daniels, who lives down east, who works with the behind the scenes at the national level. And we may have someone who lives right here in New Bern to soon be working with him to help incorporate some of the things that you're asking about. But I know there's a lot of research continuing to help give us some answers as to how bad it is and where should our scope or target be to assist in remedying this issue. We have been able to pinpoint Common Core as one of our problems.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we got Common Core, we got DEI, and we have, what's the other thing that they're doing to a CRT? So now you bring all of those elements into it, and they continue to want to pile on things. So, you know, if we understand those who are in the left side of thinking, they're always throwing their chameleon. They hit you with one thing, and then when you're starting to work on that to get it figured out, they hit you with another. So they hit you with Common Core. Then all of a sudden, here comes DEI, and then here comes the CRT, and there's always another changing thing. It was kind of like when that thing happened a couple of years ago that went around the world. There was always, well, this will help keep it from spreading. Oh, no, well, that's not. And, well, this is going to cure it. Well, this won't quite cure it, but this is going to. And so within our school system, they're doing this to our children. And they keep them from a truthful foundational way of thinking. But we're attacking the writing, reading, and arithmetic wholeheartedly. Again, getting into the homes, the churches, and starting with the parents.
If we want to look at the education, just where it started, everybody needs to keep in mind that the Department of Education didn't exist until Jimmy Carter.
Yes.
In 1976. Prior to that, the states were in charge of their own education, their own curriculum. There were standardized tests. There have always been standardized tests. But the teachers weren't given raises or promotions or tenure based on the scores. It was just a basis of what the kids were learning compared to other states and other areas. It wasn't the big deal that it is now. It wasn't the teaching to the test that it is now. And the fact that the support system at home has changed with the breakdown of our families. There isn't somebody always at home to help with homework or to help with reading or to do flashcards like a lot of us had when we were children. So the schools, I think, take a lot of the blame for the lack of knowledge, where it goes a little bit deeper than that. If you don't have a support system at home, you have to get it through other community services, either through your churches or your mentoring programs that exist.
Also, if you don't have a support system at home, you're going to find some sort of support system somewhere.
You want to belong.
Whether it's going to be a positive support system or a negative support system. And until academic achievement becomes a positive thing in the majority of support systems, we're going to have a problem.
Well, you know, you brought up the reading, writing, and arithmetic. They're teaching so many other things, whether it's climate control, climate change, whatever, all of these oddball things. There's no time for reading, writing, and arithmetic.
Well,
the basics that are measurable. I mean, we remember we've been through periods where we know that already. I think back in 2008, I guess we're flooded out since then. So we don't exist. We were burned up by the sun. I don't know, 2020 or 2005 or something like that. But all of these crazy things that they had to teach.
Well, the social emotional learning is on top of this too, and that's integrated into every topic, including math, the word problems, and then they'll bring the racial division in. So I see the education as basically a separation of the families. If I cannot help my kindergartner with Common Core math, I am therefore stupid. Therefore, the teacher is the expert. And if the teacher has an agenda opposite of mine, I've lost my influence over my own child.
I think when we were up with the Common Core, they had no curriculum that they were teaching to. They just said, you've got to go out and teach Common Core. Nobody knew what was being taught under that terminology.
When they hid it under the auspiciousness of being equal everywhere, and they tried to hide it from military children. Like, if you move from Ohio to North Carolina on Wednesday, on Thursday you'd pick up and you'd be on the same page in the same book at the same test.
Amazing.
You wouldn't miss a thing.
You know, that's strange, because my wife and I were talking when we were coming back from the convention the other day about the same thing you're just mentioning and how it was devised to divide parents and their children. And so we're sitting down trying to teach them algebra problems or any other kind of homework that we were used to. And I'm going, no. You have to do the long form. You have to understand this is how this problem needs to go. And my kids were, you know, no, this is how they told us to do it. And I say, listen, don't get smart with me. I did 9 years of chemistry that fed your tail and put Pampers on your behind. I know how to do this math. You have to do math in science. And it would cause friction in our home.
Yep.
The sad part about all this is we know how to do it better, because the schools functioned better 30, 40, 50 years ago. And how did they do that? First, like you said, Kim, they had standards. You had to meet a standard.
Absolutely.
When I went through school, if you didn't perform up to a level, you were left back. Mm-hmm. You repeated that grade. Now that never happens. The other thing is discipline. There's too much toleration of misbehavior in the classrooms because the schools are not allowing the teachers to hold the standards. And the children come and they apparently, and that's part of the difficulty with teaching it. And until we get back to what we know works, we're not going to have an improvement. And that's why there's so many parents taking their kids out of the public schools. They've given up on them.
Yes, sir.
And sports was not king. We give way too many allowances for kids that are in the sports.
Yes.
And everybody needs to recognize, parents included, that it's a privilege to be involved in extracurriculars. And if they can't keep the grades up, they shouldn't be on the teams.
That's the way it was for us in school.
Me too.
Now, another aspect of this is the number, particularly of little boys, who can't sit still in a classroom and are being put on drugs. And at the same time, they're taking away recess. And that's not fair. I agree with you that you shouldn't have an emphasis on sports, but I also think that you need to have certain breaks during the day, particularly in the lower grades, where the kids can go out and run around the playground a few times.
Yeah, and I think it's like Bob was saying, they probably, the reason they excluded recess is they want to fit all these other topics in that have nothing to do with academics. So they make room for them, and then they create more problems, because to expect a child 8, 9, 10 years old to sit in a classroom all day without taking a couple of regular breaks, because when I was in elementary school, we had recess every day. We'd go out and run around and come back.
By the way, I also want to say, did you notice they've taken away all the life-threatening jungle gyms that we used to have? We used to have the jungle gym. It was a life-threatening experience to go up to the top of the jungle gym.
And the bun fryer. Remember that?
The slides.
That's right.
It came out medium rare after sliding down.
And whoever got hurt when we were in school playing in the jungle gym. I don't recall anyone getting
hurt. Me either.
No.
Me either. Well, let's get back to the Frederick Douglass. We've kind of been down a rabbit hole here.
However, it's an important rabbit hole.
It is, because of the educational values that Frederick Douglass endorsed. So we see he was about those values. Of course, he was about family and the nuclear family. Look at how his was shredded. He never had that opportunity. Thank God for his grandmother.
And look at the value of someone who taught him to read and write, and how that served him even though it was against the law, but how that served him through his life. I mean, thank God for that woman.
Right, right. I mean, and let's think about Frederick. So I got a couple of notes here. 1872, he moves to Washington, D.C., and he purchases the 15-acre Cedar Hill estate, right? Then all of a sudden, and that was in like 1872, 1877, he becomes a federal marshal for Washington, D.C. I mean, this man was no joke, and he was a black man in an era of from slavery to the Reconstruction era, post-slavery. 1881, he becomes the first recorder of deeds for Washington, D.C. And then, as I spoke earlier, how many people, most people don't know, he was duly nominated and running on a ticket for vice president of the United States. At a time when you just, there's no way you can convince people today that in the 1800s that a black man would have that opportunity. But it's because of those educational values that he endorses, that we endorse now as the foundation that Frederick Douglass himself lived on.
So he did not, his goal was not to divide, it was to unify the people.
Absolutely.
See, and then you have Joe Biden making that commencement address where he comes out and says, if you're black, you got to work 10 times harder than a white person. And you might love America, but America doesn't love you. The most divisive, racially divisive speech I've ever heard in my life from any president or any elected official, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And so instead of encouraging people to do well and study, it's the opposite. It gives a hopeless message. No matter what you do, it's not going to work.
Exactly. And people buy it.
And we need the example of people like Frederick Douglass who say, if you work hard, you will succeed.
That's right.
Folks, we're going to take another quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. This is the CCTA Wake Up Call Show.
Torque Transmission and Automotive Repair is the transmission physician in the New Bern area. If you're experiencing transmission problems, call Charles Grover at 252-637-2399 or stop by the shop on 17 South in New Bern. Torque can install a new or reconditioned transmission, or they can rebuild your transmission if that's what you prefer. See Torque for a variety of minor automotive repairs like brakes, tune-ups, and water pump. You can count on Torque Transmission and Automotive Repair.
Stop in at East 70 Point for great deals. Drew and his knowledgeable staff have been serving the New Bern area since 1989. We always try to help our customers with friendly and honest service. Our crew is what sets us apart. Treating folks like how we want to be treated is our standard. People appreciate great service plus great prices, and that's what we're all about. Our shop is like no other. We specialize in guns, jewelry, and ammo, but we have so much more. We have the largest selection of new and used firearms, coins, collectibles, musical instruments, and tools. Our new jewelry selection is growing daily. Find us at 3317 Highway 70 East of New Bern. We're open Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. and Saturday, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Also, check out our website for many, many collectibles, east70pawn.com. East 70 Pawn is your one-stop shop to buy, sell, trade, or cash loans quickly, conveniently, and confidentially.
Moore's Old Time Barbecue is slow cooked and smoked over hickory in the tradition of the Moore's family for over 70 years. Moore's also serves fried chicken, cooked to order seafood, and homemade side dishes. Open 7 days a week in New Bern, Winterville, Moorhead City, Swansboro, and Jacksonville. Moore's will cater and deliver anywhere you want your truly traditional barbecue and fixings delivered. And remember, if it's not Moore's, it's less.
Well, welcome back. Again, thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. Where are we going now?
We're going back to Damon.
Okay.
All right. I'm going to read a little something about Frederick Douglass and just kind of get us recentered on what Frederick Douglass stands for. The Frederick Douglass Foundation of North Carolina is an education and public policy organization, which brings the sanctity of free market and limited government ideals to bear on the hardest problems facing our nation. We are a collection of conservative, proactive individuals committed to developing initiative and new approaches to today's problems with the assistance of elected officials, scholars, from universities and colleges and community activists. Righteousness, justice, liberty, virtue, devoted Christians, proud Americans, and active citizens. And this is the movement. This is the movement that actually didn't have to be a movement 50, 60, 70 years ago even. And we have now trying to bring an old school ideology, which for lack of a better phrase, into what brought success to the black community as well as Americans prior to today. The root of the issue is still going to have to be to get to the parents and to the children individually off to the side from school. And then we can attack the school issue by kids resisting when they get to school. We have to get the children to firmly believe that your parents and your family are the foundation of who you are. We have to get the parents to be able to, lack of a better word here, to indoctrinate their children with belief in the foundation of family. So I come from a family that, as we were in our discussion before coming back on air, that taught me I can be whoever I need to be, whoever I want to be. The sky is the limit, and achievement is depending on me and my quest to go after it. My parents told me that the world is limit. It has no limit to what you can be. They helped me understand how to live amongst people of different cultures. We didn't understand that there was anything different. My father grew up in Alabama, born in Alabama, grew up in Alabama. My mother was born in North Carolina, but before age two, moved to New Jersey. So I've got a Yankee mom, a growing up as a farmer boy, dad, black parents who saw no end to the possibilities of life. And they taught me that way. So I can get back, I can honestly say that the root was the structure of my home. My dad declared, he graduated high school, but he declared because of having to work the farm so much, he had no more than an eighth grade education. He taught himself to be one of the greatest engineers that we knew ever in the area of Raleigh, North Carolina, when we lived there. So much so that he designed a couple of things that he had two U.S. patents when he died. With an eighth grade education from Lower Alabama. He always liked to say he was from L.A., Lower Alabama.
Now, would you say, growing up, that it was cool to do well in school in your circle?
Absolutely. I mean, everybody wanted to compare their report cards going home. And when you didn't stand up and compare your report cards, we were like, yeah, we know what's going to be happening in your house when you get home and show this to your parents.
That's right.
And we're talking about the black kids, the white kids, and, you know, everybody thought it was pretty cool. Man, I finally got a B in English, or I finally got an A in this math class. But it was not a happy day.
But that's part of the success, because in some social circles for kids, it's not cool to get good grades.
Peer pressure is to get the minimum grade.
Yeah. And we need to change that. We need to go after that.
I think we need to. I think I agree with you, Mary, if we could change that. I think the problem is those things are so difficult to get a grip on. I think we need some very specific things. For example, in the 1990s, when Newt Gingrich was Speaker of the House, they instituted a work requirement for welfare.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some people were opposed to it. They thought it was not a good idea. But in reality, what it does is it introduced people to the realm of work. It also gave them an opportunity to advance in whatever work they started. So that's something that we should go back to. Apprenticeships. There are a lot of countries that take these kids in high school. They start them as part of their education. Mm-hmm. They go to school part-time, and they work as an apprentice somewhere for very little money. But they begin to learn a trade. They begin to understand how they can advance themselves, obviously like your father did, Damon. He advanced himself. And the other thing seems to me, we should get more successful black people going in and talking to these students, not Biden coming in and telling them they can't do anything, right. But show them this is what I've accomplished. And they don't have to be these these sports figures that are making trillions of dollars. You know, I'm not talking about that.
Right.
I'm talking about regular, successful people have their own business. They're plumbers, they're electricians, and they're making a good living, and it's something that anybody can aspire to. Not every, you know, if you bring in a sports figure, not everybody's going to be able to achieve at that level. And the other thing, it seems to me, is that to reinforce the idea of family, we have to come up with more incentives for marriage. There was a time in which getting married was an objective that men had because that was the only way to have the other satisfactions they were looking for, okay? You weren't supposed to have sex until you were married. That was part of the motivation.
Yes.
And now it with this free living together, having multiple relationships, women are having children by several different men. They don't even know who the fathers are after a while. We need, as a society, come up with some incentives or mechanisms.
Called the Bible.
Yeah, but the Bible by itself is not enough, Kim, because if that were enough, it would be working. We may perhaps look at some things that would actually be incentives for people to marry.
To support
instead of, like you said before, Mary, the early welfare thing, if you had a male living in the family, you didn't get this.
Didn't get the welfare.
We need to reverse it and say if you are married, then you're eligible for more support, good job training, things that are creative. So these are maybe some specific things that could be done. I think we need to try some new things.
But what you're talking about is the breakdown of the family, which is one of the goals of Marxism.
Oh, absolutely.
And we also saw that, again, if you threw in the IRS, there were a number of years there was a marriage penalty tax, that if you were filing separately, you paid less tax than if you were paying a joint return.
You're right.
So, Damon, when you talk to your community about the Frederick Douglass objectives, are you met with resistance?
Quite a bit. So you take a guy like myself, and most of you here know me, it will be, you were born with a silver spoon in your mouth. You're a sellout. You're an Uncle Tom, and I usually tell them, thank you very much. Because Uncle Tom, if you really understood your history, you would know who Uncle Tom is. But I'm met with resistance. But if given the opportunity, I find that oftentimes if there's one, if I can get him off to himself, so it's got to be a more one-on-one, because if you got a collection of people, now it's time for me to bristle up and show, you know, how tough I am amongst my peers. I can't be hearing what this guy's saying because it's contrary to what we've been believing and walking to. So now all of a sudden, you know, without saying it's a gang, you're almost in the midst of a gang situation.
Yeah. Damon, it wasn't that you were born with a silver spoon. You were born with the gift of an intact family.
Yes.
And that makes a big difference.
It makes a huge difference, especially when it was the double prong white leather that went around my dad's waist that made certain. Yeah. So it goes back to Alan even talking about discipline. Son, you're not going to come in here with grades like that.
Right.
I've been commended at work to, like, wow, you know, as a mechanic at the place where I work now as a service advisor, I could go up with paperwork of something I needed to repair a vehicle with, and you had to write it down on the back of the repair order. And every time I got to the parts counter, the guys at the parts counter go, oh my God, this is a breath of fresh air. I can read your handwriting. And I said, let me tell you something. There was a man named Joseph King who cracked my knuckles so bad and said, son, you're not turning that homework in. Even with his quote unquote eighth grade education, my handwriting had to be impeccable. My heading on my homework had to be just exact. And my father didn't play that. My mom was tough on me about education. And my great grandmother was a school teacher by the time she was age 16. She graduated college at age 16 from Shaw University, one of the oldest existing HBCUs in North Carolina. But remember, when my great grandmother went to school, it was a one-room schoolhouse. So whatever she could, whatever the seniors, quote unquote, were learning in the classroom, she could eavesdrop and learn. And she wound up graduating by age 12, gone to college for 4 years, and was a school teacher by age 16 in a little town called Weldon, North Carolina.
And you know, the sad part about what's going on right now in our society is with this open borders. We've got these immigrants flooding into the country. I was reading an article the other day, all the difficulties that they're having in these sanctuary cities, mm-hmm. that where the kids are overwhelming the schools. So the schools were struggling before when they had children that could actually speak English. Mm-hmm. Now you infuse hundreds and thousands of people speaking a variety of different languages, the school system is going to become less and less effective. The only way out is, like you were saying before, school choice. Your parents have to, the money should go with the parent and with the child. You want to homeschool? Fine. You have a couple of kids, you homeschool them with $10,000 per student, you can afford to stay home and do a good job. Where now, you know, you just can't do that. And so it's just collapsing with all these illegals. They need to be, as Trump said, deported.
Are there Frederick Douglass clubs that kids can get involved with, chapters like a Boy Scouts or Girl Scouts, something where a mentoring program where expectations for the kids are set?
Now, being a Frederick Douglass member for a year, I have not seen that, but what a brilliant idea.
It just seems like a mentoring opportunity, you know, that you could do easily in society as an out branch of, say, a church or even an after-school club.
Because mentoring and modeling are going to have to be key, because the government got overwhelmingly too involved in our families, in our homes, and then that some of these kids do not have parents that understand even what's going on with their kids and where they're lacking. So the mentorship and modeling process does need to take place. I'll bring that up at one of our next meetings.
You know, the just hearing about the kids needing that mentor, needing that leader, where is that leader? That leader is somebody that's got a belly up to the, I'm going to say belly up to the bar, to take care of these kids. They need everybody's involvement.
And clear expectations.
And clear expectations. Folks, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. We'll be right back.
People who learn to do something well and do it often get very good at it. Dr. Jay Singleton and his staff spend a lot of time removing cataracts, and they are good at it. Dr. Singleton has been doing a high volume of these procedures for 15 years. Let's face it, once we turn 50, the chances are we'll soon need cataract surgery. Fortunately, the Singleton Vision Center is conveniently located at 3515 Trent Road in New Bern, and the state-of-the-art Singleton Surgery Center is bringing costs down for patients and participating insurance companies. For dedication, experience, and convenience, you can trust the Singleton team. Dr. Jay Singleton and the Singleton Vision Center is conveniently located at 3515 Trent Road in New Bern.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business. It's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Welcome back. Thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. Damon, you wanted to head off to another quick topic.
Yes, sir. You know, Kim had mentioned a moment ago about the Bible and the structure of a life of people who will believe in God. You know, we have a foundation in the world. We know that there is a right and we know there is a wrong. It's kind of crazy to see people wanting to take the Ten Commandments, which comes from the Bible, out of public schools, out of public places. And, you know, they want to say that this is dangerous. We don't need these things. But I do submit, if I pull a gun and start shooting people, thou shalt not murder would emerge suddenly into your mind. So there is a foundation of life. If you just took those 10 things and actually laid them out for living, could help one to think about something. Wow, I just saw that thou shalt not steal. That's not a good thing. And if you go joyriding in someone else's car without their permission, that could not be a good thing, especially here in this county. Thank you for a wonderful sheriff and some good police officers. But we want to, you know, we're thinking about how can we bring some dignity back to who we are as a people? And we look at the black people as a culture, even all the way back into the 1800s, there was something that was really common across the board, and there was a strong sense of awareness of worship of God. Frederick Douglass himself, as we just explained, became an ordained minister in the AME Zion Church. He firmly believed, because as you mentioned before, in his earlier stages of learning to read, the reading was from the Bible. And Frederick held his life to that kind of integrity all along. And so we have to think about that. And we get to a place where we want to, if we want that to be a foundation, and please listen to me, to my brown skin community, we have to bring forth biblical values and have a biblical worldview. It is not good to murder your babies in the womb. Okay. And if we want to really get to that, we got to honor God with our vote. So we'll know who is up there pushing the buttons to try to make things happen for us or against us. Now, I'm not going to make a whole lot of big bones about it, but Margaret Sanger had a motto. She says, "We are going to do what we need to do." And that's not a quote. I'm paraphrasing her quote, to extinguish the Negro community. And that was her job. That's why Planned Parenthoods happened to be set in or very close by largely minority or black communities. She wanted to extinguish the Negro community. She said, why let a child be born into a world with a family or a group of people who have no value to advance their life? It's much better that they don't even come into the world. Well, that was one of Hillary Clinton's champions. She loved Margaret Sanger. We have to get to the place where we understand that we are valuable. And the one place that I understand and know where I can find how valuable I am is when I get to the Bible, to Genesis chapter 1, and the Lord God said, let us make man in our image and according to our likeness. And that's amazing. That's an amazing, people just kind of gloss over that. But do we realize what God has ordained for us to be, or who he has ordained for us to be? According to his likeness means we are able to make choices, decisions. We're able to use words to lift up or to tear down, to create in our lives. And then if we go to the image part, well, physically, you know, if God wanted to look like something physical, guess what he'd look like? Oh, we don't have to go very far. We just have to go to the book of Matthew and find out. He did come as a man. He didn't come as a gazelle, a giraffe, a cockroach, or a lizard. He came as a man. So according to his image and according to his likeness, when he had to exist in the atmosphere of per the laws he created to exist in, he had to come in material form, and it was as a man. So I think the Bible is very important to being able to process life and answer a lot of questions. Who am I? What am I here for? And Frederick Douglass had those questions. If you read some of his writings, he talked about those kind of basic fundamental tenets of his existence. And this is where he knew, hey, I'm important. I have value greater than what someone else is trying to tell me I have.
Well, how do we introduce, and I agree with everything you just said, how do we introduce religion to back into our society? That's the question. I think we all agree that developing a conscience mm-hmm. is critical to any society, any culture. You cannot have enough police. You cannot have enough law enforcement to watch everyone all the time. It's got to be internalized. People are born without a conscience. Yeah. It has to be developed. They have to be socialized. The question is, how do we get back? How did we get away from it? And how do we get back to it? To me, that is a critical question.
One of the things that I know biblically, again, you love your neighbor as yourself, but don't use yourself as the standard. Use Jesus as the standard.
Always, yeah.
Okay, because sometimes we hear in this situational ethics routine, when you love people as you love yourself, well, you know, I've got a lot of defects within me that I really shouldn't pass on to other people. So don't use me as the standard. Use Jesus as the standard.
Yeah. And I'm not so certain if we want to say, well, how do we integrate that as coming from an outside-in approach? I think it's those of us who are believers in Christ, who have the foundation of biblical principles for living, to integrate ourselves within a community and then let the integrity of our walk and our life with Christ permeate that zone without having to be preachy. You know, I've had teenagers and kids to just look up to me, and it gave me that opportunity to help them understand where the foundations of my life were. So I say that because I was an independent instructor and teacher for high school marching bands and professional drum and bugle corps, and I just went and taught music. I taught performing arts. You know, I wrote the visual package. I taught the horn line, the drum line, the color guard. I taught the marching and maneuvering. And I just put myself in the middle of that and allowed the integrity of Christ to, I tried to allow the integrity of Christ to be lived through me. They saw me blow my top sometime. It wasn't very often. So when I did, they were like, "Woo!"
Well, Jesus blew his top too.
Yeah, I love it.
And he flipped the table.
Yes, ma'am. And he had a whip of cords too. So one of the, John mentions that, and I tell people, I submit to you, he didn't have that whip in his hand just because he wanted to show he had fancy braiding skills. He didn't make it just for that. All right. He drove them out of the temple, right? Uh-huh. And that's what the Bible says. So you just let your imagination work a little bit.
Why not examine the idea of going back to prayer in the schools, teaching morality as part of the instruction? We can teach critical race theory. We can teach DEI. Why not have instruction about morality, about right and wrong? You could base it on religion. You can base it best on religion, best on the Bible. The Bible could be introduced as a source of it, as there might be other sources also. But I think that I don't think it's going to happen. We just sit back and wait for it to absorb it, be absorbed in. I think we're going to have to be proactive in going back to what our culture used to have. There used to be prayer in schools. There used to be, instruction. And there used to be standards that reflected that. And that reinforced for the children what was acceptable behavior and what isn't. So, you know, I don't think it's impossible to go back. We just need to have politicians. We need to have elected officials that will get behind this. Because I think you'd have a lot of parents that would like their children to have an alternative way of behaving rather than what they learn out in the streets or what they learn on their cell phones. That's another thing that's taken our kids in the wrong path.
Yes.
We're giving them these iPhones way too early.
Yes.
I would also like to see something where schools are not, as you mentioned, trying to divide parents from their children.
The social emotional learning that is in school is behind, and it could go back to everything that Alan just said. Instead of teaching right and wrong, it's how do you feel about X, Y, Z. It's not 2 + 2 = 4. If I think 2 + 2 = 5, and I'm okay with that, mm-hmm. it's how do I feel about it. Everybody today is a victim. They make themselves a victim because that's how they get themselves to be in a protected class. we need to go back to the basics of education, not how they feel about it. Jesus doesn't really care how we feel. He cares if we follow his word.
I like that.
Mm-hmm. You know, we several months ago, myself, Bob, and a few other, Glenn, a couple other people, made some presentations to the Board of Education here in Craven County of what things that we thought need to be changed. We didn't get a very positive response. In fact, we got the response we got was, it's not really happening, it's not a problem, and we've persisted with it. I wish I had something real positive to say about that experience, but I don't yet, but I don't intend to give it up. I think we need to have board members that are willing to step away from the socialist indoctrination that we're giving our kids now. That's what we need fighters. Mm-hmm. We don't need people to go in there that are going to go along. We need people who are going to go back and change the way this culture used to be. Because we're not going to get it back unless we change it back.
And it's got to be
gonna happen on its own.
Right. It's got to be on purpose. It's not going to happen, like you said, accidental or on its own. We have to be focused and on purpose with what we're trying to do.
Absolutely.
So with getting down towards the end of our program, the Frederick Douglass Foundation is a national organization. We have the Frederick Douglass Foundation in North Carolina here. I move about around Craven County presenting Frederick Douglass to precincts, small events we're able to host, or not even host, but just be a part of trying to introduce the Frederick Douglass Foundation to Eastern North Carolina. If you want to know a little bit more about us, we're www.fdfnc.org, or you can go to the Frederick Douglass, you can contact Frederick Douglass through email at Frederick Douglass of North Carolina, and FDFOFNC@gmail.com. Again, you can become a member and show us your support for wanting to make change in your community.
Thank you, Damon.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Damon. And folks, I just ask you to please do your investigation there. Go and join up. Help get us back to a community that's working together. We ask you to join us. And thank you for listening to the CCTA Wake Up Call.
Torque Transmission and Automotive Repair is the transmission physician in the New Bern area. If you're experiencing transmission problems, call Charles Grover at 252-637-2399 or stop by the shop on 17 South in New Bern. Torque can install a new or reconditioned transmission, or they can rebuild your transmission if that's what you prefer. See Torque for a variety of minor automotive repairs like brakes, tune-ups, and water pump. You can count on Torque Transmission and Automotive Repair.
The God and Country Christian Alliance has a simple mission, but it is a profound one. They want to inform and educate the public on issues of moral and political concern. They want to restore the Judeo-Christian values upon which this nation was founded to all levels of government. And they want to encourage and activate pro-family voters. Simple, but not easy. The God and Country Christian Alliance meets the third Monday of every month at Moore's Barbecue on MLK in New Bern. Meetings begin promptly at 7 p.m. and end by 8:30. To enjoy dinner with the group before the meeting, arrive between 6 and 6:30. Both the food and the company are good. Meetings include speakers and discussion, and their annual banquets are legendary. Join them on the third Monday of each month for a refreshingly candid view of the world and our place in it.
Just who are these people doing this CCTA program? They're people like you, a photographer, someone that ran their own business, someone retired from the military. Just people in the community that love this country and have a desire to do their part to lower taxes and shrink government, to protect individual liberty, and to preserve the U.S. Constitution and free enterprise system. We welcome you to come out to a meeting. If you like what you see and hear, there's a place where you can contribute to the cause. To learn more, go to cctaxpayers.com. That's cctaxpayers.com. The group meets every third Tuesday at Stanley Hall Ballroom in downtown New Bern to enjoy a fantastic speaker and report on CCTA activity since the last meeting. If you've been disappointed with rising taxes and government intrusion, don't just complain. Join Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association and make your voice heard.